not only am I going to boogie down, if I'm a quote taste of honey, I'm going to boogie, oogie, oogie, till I just can't oogie no more. But that's just me.
Now, I hated it then.
Wow. I am Paul Harris. Tim and Dan and Ian are here with me, and now Max joins us for the showbiz segment of the show. Hi, Max. How are you?
I don't know if I've ever oogied.
Oogied? Oh, yeah.
I know that I've boogied. I mean, I've boogied plenty of times, but unless Dan has seen me oogie, I'm not sure I've ever oogied.
You'd probably oogied at some point in your life.
And then you did it until you just couldn't oogie no more.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Maybe I have.
Did you like the nightlife?
Maybe you did.
That goes along with oogieing, right?
Come on, let's go. Yeah.
Thank you. Now, right. Now I'm singing Alicia Bridges in my head. Thank you. Thank you very much. Before we get to the movies today, Max,
yes.
Which will include a movie that will be on my worst of the year list, just a little teaser. Before we get to that, I have to play you my favorite TV audio of the week. And it's not from American television. Do you remember Piers Morgan?
Yes.
The pompous ass who used to be on as a judge on America's Got Talent. And for a few years, he was the guy who succeeded Larry King on CNN, creating the worst one-hour-long interview show on TV. He was just a pompous ass is the only phrase I can use to describe him. Okay. He's gone back to England, where he's on Good Morning Britain on their ITV channel. And his co-anchor is this woman named Susanna Reid. And yesterday or the day before, they were in a conversation about what people post on Facebook. And I'm going to play this audio, and it starts with something Piers Morgan says, and then listen to how Susanna Reid owns him. Roll it.
I get annoyed when people start banging on about politics on Facebook. It really annoys me. I've had to unfriend family members. Because it's just like, I can't, but please, I need some respite. Can't you just put a picture of your little kid, you know, having an ice cream or something,
exactly,
or doing a cartwheel?
Yeah, when someone just keeps going on and on and on, and you just need respite and a break, and you just wish you could defriend them, and but you're just forced every day to listen to their views. I know exactly how you feel. Okay, it's past six. Let's have a look at the front pages.
I love that. And by the way, you can't see the video, although I have it up on my website, harrisonline.com, as the picture of the day. In that moment, you see Piers Morgan just freezing his face like, okay.
You're talking about me.
Oh, it's great. All right, Max, let's start with the movies. You saw the movie that is undoubtedly going to be the number one movie of the weekend, Despicable Me 3.
Yeah, it's tracking at almost a $60 million opening, so it's going to go pretty well over the July 4th holiday weekend. Have you seen any of these films, Mr. Paul Harris?
Nope, I haven't come in. I have not come in within a minion's distance of them.
Oh, look at that. The little yellow minion, the little pill monsters, basically.
I have the reference, but I don't have the movie.
Okay,
is the Despicable guy the one with the long nose?
Yes.
That's, what's his?
Steve Carell.
Steve Carell.
The character's name is Felonious Gru. His first name is Felonious.
Okay. Yeah.
But they call him Gru. They call him his last name. This was a sort of a surprise breakout hit from the smaller animation studio called Illumination. Illumination did a movie called Hop. They did an adaptation of The Lorax. They actually still have the rights to Dr. Seuss, and they're prepping a Grinch Who Stole Christmas animated film, a feature-length version, though, not the Boris Karloff one that we all know. But after the first Despicable Me came out, it was an unexpected hit for that studio, who went on to do things like Sing and Secret Life of Pets, and now they're rolling in dough. I think the reason why that first movie worked is because it was an interesting concept. It was a supervillain who had his heart melted by these orphan girls who he goes on to adopt. And he, of course, you know, becomes a stand-up guy. I liked that first movie a lot because of the unexpected warmth. And I thought it was great for all families to see, but especially families with adoptive kids, because you don't see a lot of that reflected in children's entertainment. So I liked that first movie a whole lot. Now, the breakout stars were the little yellow-pilled creatures called Minions. They weren't in the movie a whole lot, but they were pretty much doing Three Stooges-type gags. Well, then the sequel came out, and I was really impressed with the sequel, too, because you had actual stakes for Gru against this villain called Diablo that he had a history with, and the minions turn against him, and he has to win them back, and you have Kristen Wiig as a character called Lucy, and as an adult, not just bringing my son Oscar, but as an adult, I really liked it. I thought it was funnier than the first one. I thought the minions, they did something kind of interesting with them. They made them almost gremlin type of creatures. And I really liked that second one. I kind of went overboard for it. I think it was on my top 10 best of list that year. I really liked that one. Then Illumination decided to do what Pixar did with Cars 2. If you remember with Cars 2, they took the breakout character Mater and they made him the star of Cars 2, which didn't go over well with audiences, and they've rectified that with Cars 3. Well, Illumination said, let's just do a Minions movie. The kids love the Minions. Let's just do a whole movie full of Minions. I'll tell you this about the Minions movie. I think it was unfairly dismissed by a lot of critics, by a lot of adults who were very harsh with it. I will say it's nowhere near the quality of those first two movies, but it's just for little kids. It doesn't have that sort of warmth or unexpected humor that these scripts did for the first two movies. But I can tell you that my son Oscar has watched Minions more than those first two, because it's almost a throwback to the old Warner Brothers cartoons of just sight gag after sight gag after sight gag. And I think it's okay for some kids' movies to just be for little kids.
All right,
everything has to appeal to adults.
Let me just jump in here. This idea of taking a character who is only a small part of one movie and then seeing that as the breakout character who you have to then promote for a sequel at some point. This is far from the first time this has happened.
Sure.
I mean, you remember the movie City Slickers? Billy Crystal, mm-hmm. Daniel Stern, Bruno Kirby, and Jack Palance, who won an Academy Award. At the end of City Slickers, the first movie, or two-thirds of the way through, Jack Palance's character dies.
Mm-hmm.
But after Jack Palance won the Academy Award at an Oscars that was hosted by Billy Crystal, and he was making all sorts of fun of that and having a great time that night. He did the one-arm push-ups that night. Billy Crystal decided, I have to make a City Slickers 2 sequel, and it's going to have a lot of Jack Palance. Well, wait a second, the character Curly died. Well, this is going to be his brother, and we'll call it Curly's Gold.
That's right, the legend of Curly's Gold.
By the way, Bruno Kirby was so disgusted by this idea, he said, I'm not doing that movie, and they got John Lovitz, which tells you the quality of what the sequel turned out to be. But that's not even the only one. I'll give you another example. Men in Black. In the original movie with Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith, there's a point in the movie where they pull up, they have to get information on aliens, and they pull up to a newsstand, and there's an alien-looking guy there, that you think is the alien they're going to talk to, but no, it turns out there's a little pug dog there who speaks English and who they have a conversation with, and his name is Frank. And the scene with him is pretty funny because Tommy Lee Jones is shaking him and Will Smith is telling people around, oh, don't worry about it, it's his dog. You know? It's a pretty funny moment, and it lasts for about, what, maybe 3 minutes. When they made Men in Black 2 and Tommy Lee Jones wasn't sure he wanted to do it, they made the dog Will Smith's sidekick. For about half of the movie, it's him and this dog, who really was a one-joke dog, mm-hmm. riding around and making him a full character. They do this all the time when they make sequels.
There's nothing worse than a one-joke dog. I've said that for years.
So when they did it with Minions, a lot of people said the same thing.
Yes.
And by the way, Mater from Cars 1, mm-hmm. perfect example again,
yes.
of the same thing. But Minions was not supposed to be a real Despicable Me 3
exactly.
movie.
And it was just sort of a, you know, hey kids, you like these characters, here you go. And it's fine. I think it gets a lot of hate that it's not really earned. I think it's a fine kids film. Now we have the third chapter in this franchise, and I was really stoked for this because, as I just laid out, I liked the first two very much, and I sort of viewed Minions as sort of just a little aside for the younger set. And I was really excited about this idea that Gru has a long lost brother, and what's going to happen, is he going to be evil? Well, I might have a little too much invested in this franchise, Paul, because I realized that Illumination decided to just make another Minions movie. They've decided that they're going to abandon any kind of interesting storytelling and any kind of intelligent gags for the adults, and they're just going to appeal to the younger audiences, which again is fine,
yeah.
But if you're like me and you kind of liked this franchise and you liked the second one or the first one, lower your expectations before seeing part three. In this one, Gru, who is a good guy now, along with Lucy, they're going to lose their jobs at the Anti-Villain League unless they can rescue a diamond from Balthazar Brat. Balthazar Brat is voiced by Trey Parker from South Park, and he's doing a very South Park-ish voice. And he's this, I kept thinking of Corey Feldman, and that's probably a slam on Corey Feldman, but he's an 80s star who has done nothing since.
Okay.
And because of that, he hates Hollywood, and he wants to try to strike back at Hollywood, and it's up to Gru to stop him. There's no real connection to the rest of the franchise. With Kristen Wiig's character, they try to make make her become more of a mom to the girls, but that sort of seems half-baked. So there's none of that emotional impact that the other movies had. And this movie is pretty much one set piece after the next, which keeps the kids entertained and the adults pretty bored. As far as Gru's brother, it's also voiced by Steve Carell. He looks just like Gru, except he has long blonde hair. And there again, there's no connection with this character with Julie Andrews' character, who's Gru's mom, or anything that happened in the first movie or second movie. And again, people are saying, well, you know, why do you care? Well, because they were setting up some pretty interesting mythology.
They could have done a good sequel and tied everything together.
They have just abandoned that. Okay. And they think, you know what, bright colors and goofy jokes, that's going to be enough for the kids. I will say that they do use the minions sparingly in this movie. It's not overstuffed with minions like I thought it might be. And they're fine. They're just as funny. And I took my kid. He loved it. The rest of the audience of children seemed to like it, too. It's going to do great this weekend, but I've given up any kind of hope for this once great franchise that I was kind of singing the praises of. I think it's kind of gone to just the kids now.
Rated on a scale of 1 to 10.
I'm going to give this a 7. You know, it's for what it is, it's fine.
Okay.
I'd give the first two 10s, so this one's a 7.
Okay. Higher if you're younger.
Absolutely.
The younger you are, the higher the rating.
Which is maybe how kids' movies should be. Yeah. It's just when you have movies like Moana and Frozen and Tangled, you know, or the Pixar films that as an adult you can really get into, this franchise kind of had that element and now it doesn't. Now it's just strictly for the youngest kids. But if you take them this weekend or if you're out with family because it's July 4th weekend, they're going to have a great time.
Okay. There are two other movies opening this weekend. I have seen both of them and I'm going to let you choose which one I review first.
Ooh.
One is a movie that's going to be on my worst movies of the year list. The other one is just disappointing. Which
Let's
do you want to hear
go
first?
Go with the disappointing.
Okay. The disappointing one is a movie called The Hero, which stars Sam Elliott. Sam Elliott is a rugged movie star who has one of the great voices of all time.
Beef is what's for dinner.
He hasn't done.
That was an actual clip. That was a clip.
Wow.
Yeah. He hasn't done many movies lately, and his career has mostly been voiceovers, which is why when the movie opened on a shot of him in a recording studio recording a commercial, I actually thought, okay, this could be good. Do you have the Sam Elliott? I just want to play this for you because I mean, when you'll know who I'm talking about if you don't know who Sam Elliott is. As soon as you hear this voice, you go, oh, that guy.
Lone Star Barbecue Sauce, the perfect partner for your chicken.
That's the very first line you see in the movie. Him reading that into a microphone in a recording studio.
Maybe best voice ever. I mean, it's an incredible voice.
One of those. Now, you don't see anybody else, but you hear an ad agency guy's voice say, okay, Sam, that was pretty good. Can you give us another take? And so Sam Elliott does another take, which, of course, is exactly like the first take. So he goes,
Lone Star Barbecue Sauce, the perfect partner for your chicken.
Then he waits, and you hear the ad agency guy go, okay, can you give us a few more takes? Now, at this moment, I'll get back to the review in a second, just a little personal story I have to throw in here. Many, many years ago in my career, I used to do commercial sessions. You'd go on auditions, you'd go and record them, you'd end up in a booth somewhere in a recording studio, not in a radio station, but they had recording studios in their offices or rented one out. And you'd go and you'd sit there and you'd put the headphones on and there'd be usually two or three people in the ad agency, an engineer from the recording studio, and then I would be in a booth just like where Sam Elliott was. And anybody else who's ever done this can completely relate to this because it doesn't matter how great your first take is. They in their mind, they're paying you for an hour of your time. It doesn't necessarily have to take an hour or a half hour or 15 minutes. You could nail it the first time. You could go,
Lone Star Barbecue Sauce, the perfect partner for your chicken.
And they would still say to both Sam Elliott and to me, okay, can you give us a few more takes? Yeah. And in the movie, Sam Elliott's character says, do you want to give me some direction on something different that you want? No, just give us a few more takes. I have done sessions, or I did sessions years and years ago, where they made me do 20, 21, 22, 25, 26 different takes on the same time. Sometimes it was a full commercial. Sometimes it was just one line like that.
Lone Star Barbecue Sauce. Yes. The perfect partner.
And the more you did, the more tongue twisted you got.
Yeah.
After a while, you start cracking up. It's only right. It's only a 3-second line, but you only get a second into it, and you start cracking up. Your voice cracks. You start laughing. And I thought to myself, okay, this is good because I can relate to this character. Not the great-looking Western guy who's had a long career, but this guy who has the voice and can do those commercials. Perfect. Okay. So then we get out of the recording studio, and we see that this guy is kind of weary from a life of doing all of those things. He's in his car, he's driving along, and he's gets a phone call. It's a phone call from a guy, from his agent. His agent says, hey, listen, there's a group of Western movie fans who want to honor you with a Lifetime Achievement Award. And he's like, Lifetime? Because in his mind, he's not 73, he's 43, and he doesn't feel like he's lived a full lifetime yet. What he wants is work. He wants to have jobs in movies. He doesn't want to have to go to an awards ceremony. So he says no at first, and then later on he accepts, and he goes. And before he goes there, he goes over to his drug dealer's house. His drug dealer is played by Nick Offerman, who is the real highlight of this movie. And while he's at Nick Offerman's house, hanging out with him, they're also old friends, Laura Prepon shows up. Not the real name. I mean, it's her playing a character who is half his age, but there's an attraction between them. He's 73. She's 30-something. Naturally, there's going to be an attraction between them. And so they start a relationship, and it's kind of weird. And then there's the moment where we find out what she does for a living. She's a stand-up comic, which brings me right back to something I've used as a theme. I don't know how many times this year alone, the actors trying to be stand-ups problem. They cannot do it. I keep referencing Robert De Niro in The Comedian earlier this year, which will be on my worst list. Any other time, Tom Hanks and Sally Field in Punchline, any other time actors try to do it, they're not good at it. And there's a scene in this movie where we see Laura Prepon come on stage after an actual professional comedian named Ali Wong, whose Netflix special I watched, and she's pretty funny. She's good. She's got the stand-up attitude. She's got the delivery. She's doing her own material. She's fine. Then Laura Prepon gets up there, and I know she didn't write the material, but she just doesn't have the presence and the rhythm and the things that you need on stage. And so now I'm getting more and more disappointed with this movie. And the problem from there is I don't have to worry about spoiling the rest of the plot because there really isn't much of a plot. There's one twist I won't give away in this movie, but we also have Sam Elliott meeting with his ex-wife, who's played by Catherine Ross, who, by the way, is Sam Elliott's real-life wife. I didn't know that. The woman who was the...
The Graduate.
She was in The Graduate and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
And Altered States.
And all these years later, now Mrs. Sam Elliott, she's in this movie as his ex-wife. Also, Kristen Ritter, who you may remember as the junkie who died on Breaking Bad when Walter White didn't save her when she was lying in bed next to Jesse Pinkman.
It's a great scene. Also, she's Jessica Jones on Netflix.
Right. She's also in this as Sam Elliott's character, Lee's daughter. So you've got the young woman he's dating, the older woman who's his ex-wife, the young woman who's his estranged daughter, and what are we going to do with all this? Unfortunately, not much. It's supposed to be a character study, but even in a character study, you need for things to happen. This is a movie about a guy who's at the end of his career, who's alone, he's unhappy, he's got a life going nowhere. Unfortunately, he's in a movie that's going nowhere. We actually see scenes in the movie that are flashbacks to The Hero, which was the name of a movie he made 40-odd years ago that made him famous. But we don't see anything interesting in that movie flashback that tells us why he's famous or what he did or any of that. The good news about this movie is it's only 90 minutes long. And the other good news is you do repeatedly get to hear Sam Elliott saying,
Lone Star Barbecue Sauce, the perfect partner for your chicken.
Other than that, it just disappoints.
It's too bad.
I give it a 5 out of 10. It's called The Hero.
Oh, it's too bad.
That's opening up this weekend. Now, let's take a break. We'll come back. I've got the really bad movie for this weekend to tell you about right after this as we continue with the Showbiz Show on the Big 550 KTRS. Continuing along here on the Big 550 KTRS, this is the Showbiz segment of the show. Max has given a 7 out of 10 to Despicable Me 3, which will be the big box office winner of the weekend. I gave a 5 out of 10 to the Sam Elliott movie The Hero, which is an independent movie that's going to play in just a few theaters around town.
But the movie I really wanted to see, I kept waiting for a screening notice. I was going to take my wife, Katie, because I thought it looked pretty funny, and I kept seeing the trailers, and then it kind of came and went, and there was no screening, and now it's open today in theaters. I didn't even realize it.
The movie you're talking about is The House, the new one from Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler.
Oh, yeah. I love them. They're so funny. They were on SNL together.
Did it just opened today, correct?
Yes. Actually opened up last night. I'll get to that in just a second. There was no screening, so I paid my good, hard-earned American dollars to go see this thing last night.
Thank you very much. You didn't just sneak in.
No, I didn't.
Not that I would ever sneak into a movie they didn't screen for us.
How would I sneak in?
You just walk in and you sit down and you go watch.
Just turn the mics off and Dan will.
I'll tell you how. Yeah,
I know what Dan does. I don't do that either.
You should try it.
What I should have done was ask for my money back at the end. Oh, did I spoil the review?
It's oogieing, right?
Let me just say right now that I did not have high hopes for this movie. But I did not expect that it would come in so far below my already low expectations. And I'm going to start by telling you to stay away from this piece of dreck.
Really?
Which has a lot of balls calling itself a comedy, considering it made me laugh 0 times.
I'm shocked by this.
I'm going to lay out the plot for you. Poehler and Ferrell play parents of a teenage girl who's just graduated high school. She's applying to colleges. She gets into the college that she wants, her first choice, and they are going to get a big scholarship from the town that they live in for her. One kid every year gets it, and she's been chosen. But then the scholarship is pulled out from under them for reasons too ridiculous to explain, which is a phrase I could use over and over again in this movie. Now, apparently, in their 18 years of upper middle class suburban parenthood, Ferrell and Poehler didn't think we should save some money for our child's education. They can't borrow money from the bank. They can't get raises at work. They can't think of any other way to make their finances work. I would think, how about moving out of that big house you live in into a smaller house with a better mortgage for you so you can afford this? No. How about telling your daughter she can't go to her dream school right now, go to a cheaper school for a couple of years, we'll save some money, maybe go to a community college, whatever it is. Nah.
Now, I don't know what they do in the movie, but my first thought, Paul, if my wife and I didn't save up for my kids' education and we were put in a similar circumstance, which I could completely see happening, is we would run some sort of illegal casino out of our house. Now, is that...
My thought exactly, Max.
It really would be a good idea to do that if the advice came from your loser friend whose wife is divorcing him and it's because he has a huge gambling problem.
See? Same page already.
So they do open up, and that's, by the way, they're not their first idea, but I'm going to skip that. They open up this illegal casino in the house. Now, that's the concept here. Now, I will admit to you, that's the concept that drew me in to go see this movie, because it's actually a pretty interesting premise for a well-thought-out comedy or even a well-thought-out drama. People who don't have enough money think that they're going to make money by having a casino. Fine. I don't know where in America they live that you're not within an hour of an actual casino, and they think everybody in the neighborhood is going to come, but apparently in this upper-middle-class neighborhood, nobody ever goes to St. Charles. Or downtown, or Maryland Heights, or the Alton Bell, or Casino Queen. And none of those places. Every plot point in this movie, and every non-shocking twist, is unsurprising and is ridiculous. Don't even ask me where they get the money from to finance this operation.
Paul, where do they get the money to finance the operation?
Don't even ask about that. Nobody in this movie acts like any real person would act in any similar situation. The entire cast overacts in every scene. The subplots don't matter. The soundtrack at one point includes the theme from The Sopranos, for Christ's sake. It's as if, in real life, the writer-director Andrew J. Cohen, who's made a couple of similar movies, like the Neighbors movies and one or two others just like that. It's as if Andrew J. Cohen needed some money to send his own daughter to college, but instead of making a good movie, he decided to just throw a bunch of crap into a room and turn the cameras on in the hopes that the bucks are going to start rolling in. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. And I think the studio probably knows it, which is why they didn't have a single press screening. All the other Will Ferrell movies have had press screenings, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Will Ferrell even came to town for the other guys Mark Wahlberg.
That's right. Yeah. So I went last night. If it's going to be a movie that's going to be a big hit, there are a lot of people there on Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
I bet that there were people who went out in droves last night to see Despicable Me 3.
Absolutely. And next Thursday, I'll be watching Spider-Man Homecoming in what I imagine will be a packed theater.
I bet it will. Last night at the screening I saw of The House, there were exactly 10 people in there, including me. Now, just a little side note here. I would like to personally thank the teenage couple that decided to sit directly behind me and keep talking. We're in an auditorium that has over 200 seats, and there are only 10 of us here. When I came in, I'm by myself, because my wife's not going to go to this. I went by myself, and I see, okay, there's a group of people over there. I'm not going to sit next to them. There's a group of people. Here's a couple over here. I'm not going to sit next to them. You can strategically place yourself so that you have 10 to 15 seats between you and every other person.
What are they doing talking instead of making out? Isn't that what you do when you're on a date at the movies?
By the way, if you want to do that, that's fine. Just don't do it right behind another person in an empty theater.
I do the popcorn trick.
Did you pull a George Costanza?
No, I just got up and moved. But I did have in my head George Costanza's voice saying, really? You have to sit right here?
Yeah, right.
I didn't say that. I don't want trouble. I just want to move over and
turn around and glare at them?
No, I didn't do that.
Oh, I would have glared.
I looked today online at Rotten Tomatoes to see the score for this movie.
That would have broke wind.
Yeah, but you can get them from 20 seats away, Dan.
Well, yeah, right. That's right.
Speaking of rotten things, I looked on Rotten Tomatoes today. It has a 15% positive rating. Woo.
It's pretty high based on your review so far. Yeah.
This movie has a budget of over $40 million. I would be surprised if The House makes its money back. Certainly this weekend, it's not going to make maybe 10. I'm going to say no more than $12 million this weekend.
Yeah, but if I were you, Paul, I wouldn't bet against The House.
Because The House always wins, which is the premise of this. If it does make more than $12 million, that will be the only thing about this movie that surprises me. It is horrible. I give it a 2. A 2 on a scale of 10. It will be on my worst movies of 2017 list.
Wow.
And by the way, there are some performances in here from people who I like. I mean, okay, Will Ferrell, Amy Poehler.
They're fine.
Nick Kroll is in this. I like the Kroll show. I just watched a Netflix special of something that he and John Mulaney did on Broadway called Oh, Hello, in which they play old, like 75-year-old New York hipsters who make fun of everything. It's actually very, very funny. If you have Netflix, you may want to check that out again. Oh, Hello. So I like Nick Kroll. Alison Lohman is in this. If you watched Fargo, she was the cop in the first season of Fargo. Very, very good. I thought she'd be getting bigger roles than this after that. And there are some other people in there who you may recognize, but you don't know their names. That's the kind of movie it is. This is supposed to make money just because Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler are in it. But remember, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler were in a movie called Sisters that was pretty horrible, too.
They were in Baby Mama as well, which didn't make any money. So I think that if word of mouth is bad, this one will not be taking off.
Yeah, I don't think so. Even Dan Strauss, who loves these kind of movies.
Yeah.
I have a feeling, Dan, you're going to be disappointed.
Really?
Because you've liked their other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I have.
I think a lot of Will Ferrell fans especially are going to go to this movie and say, boy, they really just walk through it.
Does he ever get to be Will Ferrell? Does he act crazy or put on a crazy, you know?
Yeah, there's some crazy stuff. I don't want to give away any of the things that
are
in there.
Does he get in his underwear at some point?
No.
Because Will Ferrell always gets in his underwear in his movies.
No, she pees on the front lawn. Does that count for anything?
Mm. Well, maybe.
Depends on who you're talking to.
No. 2 on a scale of 10.
Wow.
Just absolutely not worth it.
Oh.
Now, while we're talking about Netflix, which I mentioned a moment ago, they have a series that debuted last week called Glow. Have you seen any of this?
I have not, but I did watch episodes of the original Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling back in Florida when I was growing up, and it was a horrible, horrible show.
This would be in the mid to late 80s, right?
Yes. Yeah, I was probably about 10 or 11 when it was on TV, and I was confused by it because WWF, as it was known at the time, was a bunch of big, burly guys. They didn't really have too many women on the show who weren't, you know, managers or ring girls, and so this was giving ladies the chance to wrestle. But what my recollection of the show was 90% call out, like, I'm going to get you next week, and then 10% actual wrestling.
Yeah.
And then I forgot about the show, and now Netflix has a fictionalized version of it.
Yeah. The GLOW, the original one, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, when it came out in the 80s, it was a guy's idea to say, hey, you know what? WrestleMania is going crazy. Cyndi Lauper and Captain Lou Albano and Hulk Hogan and all that. I mean, it was huge then. It's bigger now, of course, but that was when it took off. If you go back to 1981, there was nobody paying attention to wrestling. And then in 1982 and 83, boom, huge. It just exploded. And a few years later, this guy started this thing called Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
They were not gorgeous, by the way, back in the day. I'm just going to point that out.
No.
Well, I will tell you that in this show, Mark Maron plays the guy, I don't remember his name, he plays the guy who's the director slash producer of this whole thing, and he's the one who has to cast it, and it's low budget. I mean, low budget producers would go, wow, that's low budget. And, you know, he has them come out to a warehouse where there's a ring set up, and he tells these women what it's going to be about, and 80% of the women leave, including attractive actresses who, you know, were thinking, hey, I'm going to be in a TV series. Yeah, it's going to be a TV series, but you're actually going to have to wrestle. And most of the people who are left, they've never wrestled. So they have to be taught how to wrestle, and that's what the first couple of episodes are about. And I watched the first couple of Netflix episodes about this, and I was actually a little bit intrigued by what I was seeing because I think Mark Maron's great in the role. Alison Brie is in there. You may remember her as Trudy Campbell, Pete Campbell's wife on Mad Men. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of other women whose faces I know, but I don't know what their names are. After the second episode, though, I started watching the third episode, and it just started acting like it was a cheesy thing about a cheesy thing. And that derivation just didn't work for me. And I never even made it through that whole third episode. So I know a lot of other people are saying, oh, you got to check this out. I don't think they watched more than the first two episodes.
The real GLOW was only around for about a year and a half or 2 years.
Right.
And this one, I think, is about a 13-episode miniseries. It, frankly, might be too many episodes, too many hours spent on something that was a blip on the radar.
Definitely. Yeah, you get into the backstories of all of these women too much. And, yeah, it's exactly right. If they had done a 4-episode or 6-episode miniseries about this, it might have been interesting. I'm not guaranteeing it. It might be. But there is something I do want to recommend to you on Netflix, which my wife discovered. It's a British detective series called Death in Paradise. And it's about this white English cop who's a detective who looks into murder, etc., who is called to a case on an island that's owned by England in the Caribbean. And so all the other cast members, or all the other cops at least, are Caribbean, African-Caribbean, Afro-Caribbean. Hmm. Is that what you would do? Because you could do African-American. Do you do Afro-Caribbean? And they're black. And each episode has a murder that they have to solve, and he's kind of quirky in the way he does it. It's funny. One of the funny things about it ongoing is that he wears a suit all the time and carries a briefcase. It's 90 degrees out there. He's always complaining about the heat. He's in a black suit with a white shirt and a tie, and he's complaining about it. Everybody else is in, like, you know, beach wear.
Sure.
Not bikinis, but, you know, casual floral prints and all that sort of stuff. But it's very clever, and it's very well done, and it's one of those shows where nothing is continued from one episode to the next. It's all self-contained. It's a procedural in that way, and there are several seasons of it. We haven't even made it through the first season. We're about 6 episodes in.
Now there was more than one season,
and it just becomes one of those where we go, you know what do you want to watch tonight? Hey, let's watch another episode of Death in Paradise. It's that kind of show, so you may want to put it in your Netflix queue and check it out.
Is he actually committing all the murder? because he went to the small island.
Spoiler alert! No, no, he's not. Any other showbiz stuff? We got about a minute left.
I think that's about it. On the geeky side, there are short animated Star Wars specials coming out over the July 4th weekend that'll be on YouTube. And so if you're a Star Wars fan, just go to the Star Wars YouTube and you can see the adventures of Rey and Padme and all, and Jyn Erso.
Okay.
And they should be a whole lot of fun.
All right. Next week, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yes.
And The Big Sick. This is the Showbiz Show on the Big 550 KTRS.